Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync call for Tuesday, July 13th, 2021. I'm Joe McElvain, I'm your host. If others who are present can quickly kind of say their name, and so people listening along can put a face to the voice or a name to the voice, then we'll get started right after that.
Hi, I'm Gord Tischer.
Hi, I'm Theo Butler.
Hi, David.
Hey, I'm Marcel.
Yeah. Oh, maybe my microphone is. Yeah, my timing is not correct today. Yeah, hi, I'm Borja de Regil.
Great, yeah. Thanks, everyone. So, as usual, we have a list of agenda items automatically generated based on tickets and pull requests that have been updated in the last week that is present in the Zulip chat. We're going to start off with looking at PonyLing/RFC's repo ticket 190, which is a pull request to split file path constructor to guarantee constructor with ambient auth. So there's been some discussion in the ticket so far. There's an initial change that this makes, and there's also been some discussion of adding in another level of kind of granularity to the authority that can be passed in. And so that change is going to be made to the RFC soon. But if anybody has comments or questions about the RFC that they want to talk about now in this call, we can. Otherwise, we can just wait for that change to trickle in and discuss more at a later time. Anybody have thoughts on this to discuss now?
No real thoughts other than this seems like a good change, and I agree with the additional level of granularity that was discussed. Seems like a good change.
Yeah, same here. Yep, so do I. Any other thoughts before we move on? All right, well, in that case, we will move on to the Pony C repo. Let's look at pull request 3801. Hey, this is my own. This pull request is making a small change to the CMakeList file for libponyrt, which is the Pony runtime, to allow cross-compiling of libponyrt.bc, which is the bitcode version of that runtime. I tagged Gordon. I tagged you here as the reviewer because you're kind of our resident CMake expert. So if there's like a better way to make this change that doesn't use the if statement there that I included, maybe there's a better way to do this. I noticed that if I added the target equals without a value for it, then Clang was angry at me. And so I wasn't able to just have dash dash target equals the variable name. It needed to be only present the flag if I was going to set it. And I couldn't figure out what the sort of default value to put there without having to detect it. So that's kind of what's going on there. If you have thoughts about how to do this better, after you take a look, let me know and I can adjust the pull request. Otherwise, this is ready for review.
That part looks good to me. I just have one nitpick about the documentation.
Okay, sounds good.
So you should be able to see it there.
Let me have to refresh. I don't see it there. Did you submit the, sometimes if you make comment but you haven't submitted the review, so in the upper right in GitHub, there's like a review changes button where you can submit the comments you've made in draft.
Oh, okay, I see.
It can be confusing sometimes.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so there now I have submitted it. Sorry.
No problem. Oh, yes. I wrote the target triple for all three of the variables. Okay, I will get that fixed shortly and then resubmit. Ask for you to give a final review to that. But yeah, that's that'll be fixable easily. So with that in mind, we have next up pull request 3788, which is titled add readme for each examples entry. So it looks like, yeah, this has the do not merge label. It's a work in progress. Ryan Hagenson is working on adding a little bit of documentation to each of the example programs. He posed a question yesterday. Before I get too far with writing these, anyone have comments on the general structure? There's a comment here that has kind of a general structure proposed. I think in general the structure makes sense to me. So I'm gonna add a comment of saying the structure makes sense to me. But if the other people have thoughts about the structure, we could talk about those here, or we could just add in this comment to the ticket.
I think it looks fine. I haven't looked at all the examples in a while, so I don't know if there might be some example that needs a special feel or description, but so far I think it looks fine.
Yeah, I think this is definitely helpful specifically for the how to run section of it, because sometimes you have to end up looking at the source code to figure out what the options are for some of the examples, especially in Pony C.
Sounds good. Okay. With that in mind, we'll move on to the next pull request, which is 3281. It has two numbers there. It's interesting. The sync helper script has two numbers, 3281 and 3785. I'm not sure which one's correct. 3281 is from a long time ago. Oh, it was referenced by, there's a branch that Ryan Hagenson was working on. And so it was just referenced in the commit. So it looks like Ryan's working on this. There may not be too much to discuss on that. What is the other number here? We have 3785. Oh, that's the associated pull request. Great. Okay. So it was just confusing because it was showed on the same line in our agenda list. So pull request 3785 in the Pony C repo is the pull request for fixing ticket 3281. This is another do not merge because it's not, because it's still in progress. If people have thoughts about the documentation that's being added, they could discuss that here in the call or just in a ticket comment as well. So far, it looks like all sensible changes to me. Okay. So
I think there's an issue, very old issue about adding documentation to the either term or CLI packets. So I don't know, maybe we can link it from here and it can be closed if we add documentation on this pull request.
Yeah, it would be great to deduplicate those and close extra tickets if we can. Agreed.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it.
That'd be great, thank you. We have pull request 3781 up next, which is titled prevent non-opaque structs from being used as behavior parameters. It looks like this one is ready to merge, perhaps. Borja, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is ready to be merged. Jason gave it a look, but if you can also give it a review, I think that would be okay. But yeah, as far as development, it's done.
Yes, I did take a look at this, but for some reason didn't click the approve button. So, yep, I'll go ahead and merge it then. Thank you for taking this on. Does this have a, yes, okay, you have a comment in there that says fixes 3765, so that should automatically close the ticket when I merge it here.
Nice. Yeah. So this will go out. This will go out with the release that's happening this week. Awesome.
Okay, it has been merged.
Since this is this change is also a breaking change, right? Because you might have like people may have to wrap structs in classes. So.
No, it would not be a breaking change because anybody who tried to do this before, the compiler would have crashed.
Yeah, they probably would have already seen the crash.
Yeah, the program would have crashed. So no, I would not call this a breaking change.
Okay.
I suppose it depends on the definition of breaking change. You would have to change your code because of this, but your code would have been code that was just crashing. So I wouldn't consider it breaking.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. Agree. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, great. So the next on our agenda is 3673. This looks to be another documentation related pull request, although this is from another contributor. It looks like this is a pull request from a while ago. So this is from last fall. And it looks like Ryan Higginson is chiming in to see if there's anything that we can do to push this across the finish line. And offering help with that. So that's great. We'll look for more progress on that. It looks like the original contributor says they're going to take another look at it in a few days and try and see if they can finish it up. So that's great. And if not, then we can kind of pull that in some other form or, rewrite it if we need to. That's on the table. So let's see, we've got issue 3784 in the PonyC repo, which was open 6 days ago. I assigned myself to it. There was already some great triaging from various folks, and I have been looking into what's going on in the LLVM optimization passes for this. As I mentioned in the ticket, I was thinking I had this fixed because everything was working now for the more minimal reproductions later in the ticket, but I'm seeing a different, it's a crash in a later part of the optimization process of compilation. It's in a later optimization pass, one that we don't even control. So I'm trying to figure out how that's related and how we can remove that other crash. But yeah, so basically I have it fixed for some of the repros in this ticket, but the original repro is still failing and failing in a slightly different way. So I'm still taking a look at this and will continue to do so. It's just a little bit opaque what's going on with LLVM, but I'm trying to work through that. Any other thoughts or questions about what's going on there?
Yeah, so Joe, you mentioned that this has to do with like inlining functions, but in the, at least in the minimal case, is it just because it's using an iterator and it's trying to optimize that, or because there's no function call, right? I mean, it's all in the constructor.
Which minimal case are you referring to?
I think it's the first one that's on.
There's a bunch that have been proposed as minimal cases. I'm not sure. Like, who was it posted by and how many days ago, I suppose, is the question.
I think the very first opened version, which I didn't cut down into a smaller size, would be one where that would be the case, Joe, right? Okay. Where it's everything happens purely in the, everything that's really interesting about it happens purely in the constructor, where there are a couple, it creates an actor, there are a couple calls to it. Then it does the loop, right? For animal in these three things. And does the calls to env print animal. That would be a good one to see what's going on, because you're right, in some of the later ones for how I broke that down, there is inlining that would happen. But this all is basically in the constructor, I believe, and still has the issue, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember if this is true or not, but I believe in the Pony C compiler. This is definitely true of the compiler I've been working on. But in the Pony C compiler, I believe we have like a send function, so that like, so calling a behavior is like calling a send function. So it's calling a send function directly, and the send function is responsible for allocating the message and you know, sending it to the appropriate actor. And so I think this can still be explained by inlining if that's the case, right? Because the send function is getting inlined. And so we have the message allocation from within the send function getting inlined into, or like from within two different send functions, right? Because we have the, in this one I'm looking at from Sean, the first one posted by Sean, we have the actor a.a call, which is a behavior call, and we have the env.out.print, e.out.print, that is another behavior call. And so I think it could still be explained by inlining, but it's also true that I'm not 100% sure about the inlining being the reason. All I can see is that's the only explanation I've been able to think of so far of how we'd be running this pass a second time.
I don't think there should be any inlining in that first minimal version that I did, but it shouldn't be chaining those, I believe. One thing that may or may not help with this, Joe, if that first minimal version that I did triggers the later pass for you, I'm 90% sure that somewhere later in this chain, I noted that if you flip the for and the let calls, that there was no longer the crash. And so that might be able to help you. If this minimal version does, it might be able to give some clue as to what's going on.
Yeah, I can take a look. I'm curious to, there's a couple things I'm curious about. One of them is I'm looking right now for in what code do we generate the call to Pony Alloc message to see if it's true that I'm what I'm thinking about the Pony Alloc message being called in like a send function rather than a, I'm looking to see if it's actually done like this, like I expect, or if it's done differently. So, okay, I'm looking at in gencall.c, I'm looking at gen send message, which generates the code for Pony Alloc message. So where's gen send message invoked from? That's invoked from within gen call. So yeah, it seems like I had the wrong assumption about how we're generating the code for that. I was thinking that what was true of one compiler is true of another, but it's not true in this case. So it looks like we're generating the send directly in line already in the original function rather than having a separate send function that gets called. So with that, I'm not sure. Yeah, it sounds like inlining would not be involved. So I need to take another look and see if I can gain any other information about that. The other thing I was curious about was, Sean, you had made a comment about so this is your second comment in the ticket. Given that this happens with a single element in the array and requires a.a to be present, it seems like it's trying to chain the print and a message calls together, which if I remember correctly, is definitely not okay. That I don't understand by what reasoning you're coming to that like definitely not okay judgment.
What my understanding was that the chaining of message sends was, this was chaining sends to individual actors, is that everything in the chain was calls to the same actor.
I don't think that's not always the case.
It's not always the case.
Yeah, we have things in the chain. Let me see. Let me look at the code again, just to be sure I'm saying it correctly.
I could very well be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I think so. We definitely we have two separate functions that one is for single. One is capable of handling chains sent to a single actor, and one is capable of handling chains sent to multiple actors.
Okay. I misremembered then when I looked at those, what those were for, right? And I didn't dig in to that to verify that bit. Okay, that would be where I went astray in my understanding, because, I mean, it's been, what is this, went in like 3 or 4 years ago.
So, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it looks like it's basically the code is attempting to compensate, the genopt pass is attempting to choose the correct function, whether it calls pony underscore send v underscore single for multiple messages or a single message directed at a single actor, or pony underscore send v plane, which is like the, you know, sending a single message or multiple messages to multiple actors. And I don't know. I think it's possible to chain for both. And so, yeah. It's okay. So now I understand why you were thinking it's definitely not okay. And sounds like it is potentially okay as long as the optimization pass can be written properly. So I lost my tab where we were talking about this, but I don't have much else to talk about here. I will look through some of the other cases and see if the inlining hypothesis is still there and just kind of get more visibility into that. But that's status of that. Okay, so let's see, do we have anything to discuss related to the release ticket?
Sorry, I was mute. I was going to say something to the for the previous.
Sure, go ahead.
So we were talking about this chaining bit. My understanding was that the bug, if it was coming from the heap to stack pass, and if it only happens with strings, it looks like it only happens when the last send is actually a string literal. So it might have something to do with this specialization that we do for string literals in memory. But I don't know.
It could be. I don't think that the specifically the assert that says, like pony assert prev message equals, iter arrow get arg operand 3. What this is basically asserting is that the iter is pointing to a specific instruction in the LLVM basic block. And this is asserting that this is a call where the second operand is the same as the third operand. The second argument, same as the third argument. So this is like a chain of one. And so basically this assertion is saying that, okay, if we're looking at this call that we're trying to make a chain out of, we're asserting that this is a single message chain. And if it's not, we don't know how to handle it. And so I don't think that's directly related to the heap to stack pass. And it's possible that like it's possible that the presence of the heap to stack pass was causing what was causing this to run twice rather than inlining, and maybe that explains it. LLVM tries to control, like it tries to make a plan of what order it's going to run passes for each other, and then it has like rules about, okay, this pass depends on these other passes being present already, and it invalidates or preserves other passes when it modifies things. And so it could be that pass invalidation, it could be that having heap to stack in place, just like having our that pass in place, regardless of what it did, even if it did nothing, was causing the message chaining pass to run a second time on the same code rather than inlining, causing it to run a second time on the same code as I originally hypothesized. It could be the presence of the second pass was doing it. And basically, I think the issue with this pass as it stands right now is that the message send pass fails with this assertion if you try to run it on code that has been where it's already been run before, but it includes some code where it did not merge everything. And so it basically has this case of like not set of not implemented cases that probably need to be implemented unless we're going to figure out a way to make sure it never happens that it's operating on code that it has already merged and code that is not already merged. And so I was thinking that inlining explains why it would sometimes operate on code on a mixture of code that it's already operated on and code that it hasn't operated on, or rather, I should say that in a different way, because that's kind of wrong what I just said. Inlining explains why it would operate on like two chunks of code that have both had this pass run separately, but they haven't had the pass run together yet, and they could potentially be merged together to make like, you know, so you create two subchains the first time you run the pass, then there's some inlining that happens, and then you can create a longer chain out of those two subchains. But right now, if we run into trying to merge two existing chains together, we fail. So we either need some way to prevent that from ever happening, which I don't think is possible in the case of, you know, inlining being available as an optimization. We want it to be available. So we don't want to prevent that from happening. We just want to handle the case, I think, is what I'm looking at now. So that's the way I'm thinking about this. I haven't found an interaction yet with the heap to stack pass, but it's possible it still could be there, because again, I don't understand all of the crashing that's happening, and the changes I made locally have only fixed a subset of the cases.
Right, because in some of the examples, if you disable the heap to stack pass, then everything goes right. Like there's no assertion error anywhere.
So I'm wondering if the heap to stack pass is invalidating other LLVM passes and causing LLVM to start over again and run a bunch of stuff again, right? Because mm-hmm. if you have a pass and LLVM thinks you may have modified things, then previous analyses that it's done become invalid, and it has to run them again. And it's possible that maybe also causes inlining to run again. As well, because if you move stuff around, you think that inlining could run again, or some other thing that can, like, I'm thinking maybe like loop invariant code motion, or there's other things in LLVM that can move things around from block to block apart from just inlining. And maybe that's what's going on right in this minimal example where we have like a for loop that Sean posted. We have a for loop. It only has one element in it, and LLVM is probably doing loop invariant code motion, where it's like trying to move stuff out of the loop block as long as it can prove that it still has the same semantics. And so it could be that loop invariant code motion explains why it's like taking the place of inlining in that explanation or that rationalization. And so it could be that heap to stack moves things around in some way that allows new things to be inlined or new things to be loop invariant code motion moved, or one of these other passes that can move things around between basic blocks, because the message chaining pass that we have is looking at all of the message sends that are in the same basic block and collapsing them into a chain because it's known that it's safe and doesn't change semantics and it's a performance improvement. So anything that's within the same basic block is getting merged together. But if we have code that's moving around between basic blocks, either through inlining or loop invariant code motion or something else, that can kind of explain why we're now seeing a mixture like chains that we're trying to make into a longer chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see.
Okay, so with that in mind, we can... I keep saying with that in mind, but we can put it out of mind probably. Let's take a look at the Pony Up repo, issue 66, which is the most recent activity is just a note from Ryan Higginson saying whoever works on this to basically keep this point in mind of removing a corresponding binaries directory and also removing the corresponding entry from the .lock. And apparently he ran into that issue and it was not what it was expected. So that's something to keep in mind for the remove command. Anybody have thoughts about the pony up remove command? Okay. We've got a pull request in the release bot action repo for updating the documentation.
I have Borja going through it. It's the last thing before I do the release for a big new version and then start updating everything to take advantage of it.
All right.
Yeah, I have to reread your last comment.
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, I don't know if I understand what he's saying, but now that I look at this, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense being right there. So I redid not a ton of stuff, but several things in response to one of your comments. I didn't touch just it, but I touched multiple things where I was like,
I realized later then I was just not reading the sentence correctly.
Well, it led me to go, you know, this is in the wrong place to be like for this anyway. So I moved a number of things around. So it ended up being helpful, even if you misread it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll read it again.
Okay. Sounds good. That is all we have on our automatically generated agenda. Do people have things that they would like to raise for discussion here in the second half of the call?
I just kind of have yet another cry for help. I'm getting absolutely nowhere with the 32-bit ARM failures on the LLVM-12 branch. So if anybody has any experience or insight into that, help would be much appreciated.
I thought we decided that we were dropping 32-bit ARM. Did I misremember that?
I don't remember that discussion, but that would certainly make things a lot easier.
Because I said, but I have all of these 32-bit ARM like Raspberry Pis that I'd like to keep using. And like two or three people, including Andy, basically said the equivalent of cry me a river, Sean. And then I said, fine.
Okay, I guess I misinterpreted that conversation then.
I thought everybody was saying like, no, Sean, tough shit.
So from what I remember, maybe we discussed it, but Joe, I think we also found that the same error happened on the M1. I might be not remembering this correctly, but I thought that the same assertion or the same error was also happening on the M1. So it's not completely related to 32-bit ARM, so maybe it also happened on 64-bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I believe I tried to reproduce it on the M1 and didn't actually get there. I wonder if it was because of just like my failure to get there, or because I did spend some time trying to reproduce it, but I think the issue may have been that I just like failed to get that far. But I'm trying to look back through. Is there some kind of record of the conversation about?
I don't know. We wrote it down somewhere.
I'm looking at our latest conversation. Well, this is not the latest conversation, never mind. But one issue that maybe people on this call know that I actually ran into when I was trying to test something with the M1 was basically, well, while trying to compile on M1 was, you know what, that says,
I posted a comment on the sync stream from a comment I did a while ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was the same or at least that's what they wrote at the time. That it was, I thought it was the same issue as 32-bit ARM.
Let's see. So, just to kind of like look closer at this, let's see. How do we know it's the same? And let me load up the LLVM 12 branch or the pull request and look at the CI failures, I suppose, and look at the backtraces. I think, you know, I've worked through some other stuff with the M1 now. So I may be able to come back to this after looking at the specific optimization passes. But I want to hopefully confirm here that it's the same issue and not a different one. Because if it's a different one, then hopefully we can just drop ARM 32 and then let Gordon get on with his life and have LLVM 12, which would be great. And maybe we should do that anyway and just have the M1 fix come later, and then we could re-enable the ARM builds if it turns out that the M1 fix is working.
Does Cirrus have any M1 machines for CI?
I don't think so, not yet.
Nobody has any M1 machines for CI. Nobody.
So one thing I had been playing around with is, you know, I can compile the runtime bit code using an x86-64 Mac on Cirrus. So you can test that something compiles. You can cross compile from x86-64 Mac to the M1 ARM64 Mac, and maybe that's something that we could add to our pipeline for testing, is at least test that things can compile even if we're not able to run them in CI. Probably be better than nothing.
Yeah, we could do that.
But I'm looking here at this the failure in CI for ARM 32-bit. I'm not seeing the full information here.
What happens is when you call Pony error, it calls this function unwind raise exception, which is supposed to start looking through the stack and raising and doing exception handling, but that function is erroring out. And so because that function returns with an error value, we abort and then.
Yeah, so what happened with the M1 is that there was some LLVM pass switched things around and made them undef, and that crashed and like it caused a sec fault. Or something like that. That's my recollection of the conversation that we had, Joe.
Yeah. A while ago. What are we thinking? This is the. How do we know it's the same issue? I guess is the question.
Yeah, I think unless we get like a stack trace of the error on 32-bit, then we can compare it with the.
I'm leaning towards saying that if we generally think that it's okay to at least temporarily drop support for 32-bit ARM, then what I would suggest and propose is that we like comment out the, you know, not get rid of entirely, but comment out, or I guess we could always go back to give history, but, you know, temporarily or permanently disable the 32-bit ARM from CI and just try to get LLVM 12 merged in, and then separately try to fix whatever issues we're seeing on M1. And then once that's done, take a look and see if our fix also fixed ARM 32-bit, and then we can turn that CI back on. What do people think about that suggestion?
And I'm hoping that when all of the M1 stuff is fixed, that the problems that we had that led us to never turn on the ARCH 64 CI would also be fixed at that point. So I think saying that we're going to do the 32-bit and the 64-bit in that same way right now seems reasonable.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Okay, cool. Let's do that. And then after I'm done looking at this LLVM optimization thing that we were talking about earlier in the call, this other bug, I will spend some more time on figuring out what's going on with the unwind stuff. Anybody else have things they want to bring up here at the end of the call?
Just because we are talking about LLVM 12, and I was thinking about this the other day, whenever we get the LLVM 12 done, I'm going to go through shortly thereafter. I haven't done this yet because I didn't want to make life awful for the LLVM 12 one. But once that goes in, I'm going to go through the code base and do the thing we talked about like a couple years ago when we switched over to using our own version of LLVM and remove all of the code that's related to support for older versions of LLVM. Like, you know, hey, if LLVM 3, if LLVM 4, if LLVM 5, all of that stuff, which is just a pain in the ass when you're trying to go through and understand what's going on with LLVM stuff going, okay, now I need to ignore this bit of code, which is not important, and this bit, and will never be important.
Yes, that makes sense to me.
But I definitely didn't want to do it in a way where it would get merged and then it would make the LLVM 12 merge awful.
Yeah, let's make things as easy for as possible for ourselves before lucky number LLVM 13.
Yes. Yes.
On my mind right now, while we're on the topic of unwind issues, this is something I've been thinking about recently, which is I think we could consider, instead of using the sort of exception unwinding mechanism for Pony error, we could consider using what's effectively like a jump or non-local return for error, where the syntax on the caller, or sorry, not the syntax, the like the implementation on the caller side is something like you get returned like the normal return value of the function plus a bit flag that tells you whether it had an error or not. This is an implementation that I've like been, you know, testing in my other compiler, and it's something that it's not, I haven't really done the performance testing on it like in earnest, but basically what I would expect is that this is something that would, it would add some amount of performance costs for cases where it would add a certain level of overhead for like checking this error flag after every function call that could error. It adds some overhead, but at the same time, it would make it would make errors faster for the cases where they're not rare. I think right now, the Pony exception handling style of implementing these errors is sort of making the assumption that getting an error is going to be sufficiently rare that if you have an error in your hot path, then you've done something wrong. Whereas with as pervasive as errors are kind of in the standard library and just kind of the general Pony idioms, I think the way things turn out is you use errors a lot and they're not always rare. Many of them are not rare. And I think the trade-off, you can make a case for the trade-off. That's just something that I've been thinking about I'm curious other people's have thoughts on this, this idea of changing how errors are implemented.
Would that have any impact on the C or C++, either the CFFI or the handling of exceptions that come from C++ code?
It would, yes, it absolutely would. Like those things would not, it would be breaking changes in those areas.
I would be interested in hearing more about like what the impact of those would be, in addition to, you know, it would be great to make a final decision with being able to have some type of idea of, for different types of workloads, what vaguely the performance implications would be. Right. That's my broad general statement of, I hadn't thought about this ever at all. Those are the things that come to mind for me right now.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I think like, you know, I wasn't aware of people depending on the FFI behavior. I mean, it makes sense that they would be. And I know some people, I guess I wasn't thinking about FFI errors, right? But in terms of if you're embedding Pony inside of C code, that definitely has an impact if you have any of that surface that can raise an error, because what you'd see on the C side is now that it would now return like a struct by value, where it's effectively returning a tuple of the result you wanted or junk. And a flag that tells you whether it was an error, in which case the result you wanted valid or not, or sorry, in case it was error, in which case the result you wanted value is junk. And it was like, you know, the other option being it wasn't not an error and the result value you wanted is valid. And so it would change the like CABI of Pony functions, in addition to the like exception catching of C++ exceptions, which I'm not aware of people depending on. I don't know. Maybe they are.
If those are the only two places, then I wouldn't be particularly concerned about either one of those things, right? Yes, that would be my statement on those, if that's where it'd be impacting.
Yeah, we have a test for the C++ exceptions on the somewhere, yeah. And I think that test is broken on the M1.
If unwind is broken on the M1 and broken on ARM32, that makes sense.
But I think this test for C++ is also broken on Windows.
Interesting.
Yeah, we've disabled that check for Windows for a couple of years now.
Okay. Basically this is, like I said, it does change the performance calculus, but it's, you know, kind of, arguably there might be room for like both kinds of error. And like what I've been thinking about kind of trying to like weigh in my mind is an idea of, if you had error as being what's effectively like a, you know, a flag on the return value, or a jump if you're within the same function, then you wanted something for like the truly exceptional cases, you could have something like, and I think this is kind of like what Rust does, right? You have panic, which is like an actual unwind. I know we've discussed panic in the past on previous Pony sync calls. It's kind of weird to think about panic with capabilities. And so that idea hasn't really gotten traction, but it could make sense that there's like two different kinds of errors. Like one kind that's like not really exceptional at all. And something that happens fairly often, and it's just kind of like a control flow. As I would argue, lots of error is used a lot of times today in Pony, although that is an anti-pattern for performance hot path code. But I think it's used a lot that way by default in Pony right today. And then this other class of errors, which is like, hey, this should never happen. And if this thing happens, then everything's kind of a mess and we're okay to like unwind to some higher level thing that can catch that. And that's free to be something that's like expensive. It could gather a nice stack trace, for example. I don't know. Things to think about. Okay. Anything else that people want to raise while we're on the call?
One thing before we go. One thing that would be nice if anybody is listening or who's on the call is something, this is something they'd be interested in. We currently use either Clang or GCC or an equivalent C compiler to do linking with PonyC. It would involve, it should be entirely doable, but involves a bit of heavy lifting. We should be able at this point now, with how far it's advanced, to use LLD and embed it in PonyC and use it and do linking directly ourselves, and save some pain and frustration and some weirdness that can result with pre-built binaries and whatnot, or taking PonyC binaries in general and moving it around. I don't have time to work on that anytime in the near future, but it would be a really nice improvement for the ecosystem if that's something that somebody like who's interested in compiler related things wanted to take on.
It's interesting. I wasn't aware that LLD embedding was a thing. That's pretty cool.
You can embed Clang too.
Well, yes you can. And then the whole world of FFI auto generation or whatever. Interesting. Okay, cool. Okay, if there's nothing else, we will wrap it up today. Thank you everyone for attending, or those listening along after the fact. Thanks.